It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 279. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap a not-so-great series out in Denver against the Colorado Rockies. The Phillies losing 3 out of 4 out west. We're going to talk about all the different games. Some good starting pitching performances in Colorado, but the offense was up and down. The Phillies are dealing with a rash of injuries. We'll talk about that and preview their upcoming series against the New York Mets. Helping me do all that, as they do every Sunday night, are Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. You know Justin as the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And of course, Liz is a fantastic writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
I just want to point out that this was the weekend in which they discovered $44,000 in counterfeit Bryce Harper jerseys. They were discovered by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection at the Port of Philadelphia. 314
nice.
Counterfeit Bryce Harper jerseys since opening day have been busted there. And as one of the representatives for the Customs Department said, transnational criminal organizations counterfeit popular consumer products, and Mr. Harper's Phillies jersey is among the hottest consumer goods selling today. So Bryce Harper, so good, he actually started his own mini black market subculture. In fact, the news release on them finding all these counterfeit jerseys actually said, well, that didn't take long.
That's true. Liz, yeah, I mean, have you gotten your counterfeit Bryce Harper jersey yet? I've got mine.
No, there are no counterfeit goods in this house at all. No one could prove there are.
None. No, I wouldn't think so.
Why did anyone even bring this up?
Mine looks exactly like a regular Bryce Harper jersey, except instead of a number on the back, it's got a giant Mr. Met face on it. So
that's a dead giveaway.
Other than that,
that's the dead giveaway. Yeah,
gotta tell you, I would wear that. That sounds awesome.
I actually know someone who got one of those fake Bryce Harper jerseys from China. I know someone who got one.
I know a customs official who wants to talk to you, John.
Yes. I take it all back. I actually don't know anyone who has one. Let's just move on with the podcast. Episode number 279 of Hittin' Season. Let's talk about this series against the Rockies here, as the Phillies lost 3 out of 4 out west, and it was a disappointing series. The Phillies really should have at least split the series with the Rockies with their loss on Saturday, which we'll get to in just a second. But the Phillies lost on Thursday 6-2. Zach Eflin pitched pretty well, but the offense managed just 5 hits in that one. On Friday, they lost a crusher. It was on Friday they lost the heartbreaker 4-3 in 12 innings. I know. We'll get into that one more in just a second. That one was an absolute brutal game. Saturday, the Phillies won 8-5 behind an encouraging Aaron Nola start and a big-time three-run bomb for Bryce Harper. And then on Sunday, the Phillies really were just not in this game in any way, 4-1, losing to John Gray and the Rockies. Again, the offense fell flat in Colorado. They're now 12-9 on the season. They're still one game up in the National League East. They're now 5-13 against the Rockies since 2017, guys, and have lost 7 out of their last 8 in Coors Field, where they have been outscored 58-21 in those games. And Justin, you know, this is a park where a good offense like the Phillies you would have thought would have sprung to life. But while they piled up a bunch of hits in some of these games, in the game on Thursday and the game on Sunday, they only managed 5 hits in each of those games. And then in the 2 games in the middle, they got a ton of hits and couldn't really drive anybody home. It was a very frustrating series in Colorado for the Phillies, where the starting pitching was actually surprisingly the best part of the team.
Well, it's another example of how stupid this sport is and how ridiculous it is that we talk about it as often as we do, because if there's any way we could predict what's going to happen next. I mean, anybody going into this series would tell you that 4 games in Denver is exactly what this team needs to get its offense restarted. I'm not looking at the exact numbers, but I know for a fact that Bryce Harper was a 387 hitter at Coors Field going into this weekend. And yeah, like you said, it wound up being much more frustrating on the offensive side than the pitching side. Alternatively, I would never have guessed that this was the series in which we'd see some of the most encouraging starting pitching this team's produced this season. Unfortunately, yeah, just wasn't enough. And I think we're really trying to brand this team and just figure out who they are. And I maintain that they really are obviously an offensive, capable of being a deeply offensive team. But you wouldn't have known that watching this series. It was an all too...
Wait. Deeply offensive or deeply offensive? That's an important distinction.
Well, both, hopefully. Hopefully they're so... they hit the ball so well that people's feelings are hurt by it.
There you go. I like that one better, yeah.
But this was an all too familiar sense of frustration. We had plenty of podcasts last year where we talked about the Phillies being able to get guys on base but not being able to score, and doing that in two games was more than enough to remind us of what 2018 was like. And we don't need to be reminded of what 2018 was like. I don't know if there's a, you know, we could comb over some footage and determine how exactly the Phillies weren't hitting the ball, but I think it obviously comes down to something we're going to talk about later in the podcast, and that's that, you know, when this series started, they were probably a little deeper than they were roster wise when they left. Mm-hmm. And certain bats aren't in the lineup and quad A fill-ins are, then yeah, your offense isn't going to be as powerful. Still, frustrating series. Even with the encouraging pitching performances, I'm still not feeling that good about it, frankly. Nobody was so sparkling that I feel like really encouraged coming out of this.
And Liz, I think that's I think that's something to think about here, what Justin just finished up on. The starting pitching performances, if you're going to take a positive out of the series, that's the thing to take out of it. But the question is how much you believe in it, because Zach Eflin pitched okay on Thursday, actually pitched pretty well. 3 runs allowed, 2 earned runs in 6 innings, only had 2 strikeouts with 3 walks, but still got results. He left the game having only given up 3 runs and had pitched 5 scoreless innings before giving up 3 in the 6th. Vince Velasquez looked really good on Friday, 5 2/3 innings, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk for him, 7 hits allowed, just 2 earned runs given up. And that was a killer of a game. They got into the 12th inning 2-2. They went up 3-2 in the 12th on a Bryce Harper double that scored Phil Gosselin. But then Juan Nicasio gave up the team's 2nd walk-off home run on a 2-out, 2-strike pitch this season, this one to Charlie Blackmon. Aaron Nola probably had the worst start out of any of the starting pitchers this weekend. I guess I won't say that. Eichhoff and him were about the same, but Nola really showed something. We're getting into Aaron Nola a little bit more coming up here in a few minutes, but he had a pretty good outing on Saturday, and then of course Jared Eichhoff making his return on Sunday. What is your main takeaway from this series, Liz? Is it the failures of the offense to hit with runners in scoring position? Is it the performance of the starting pitching? Or is it just, hey, they could have split this series if not for one terrible pitch from Juan Nicasio?
Maybe it's all of the
No, above. You got to pick one.
I feel like if I focus too much on the pitching, if we look too hard at it, it's going to stop. Like, this is what they're supposed to be doing. Like, it,
right.
Vaguely. Like, this is what they're supposed to be doing. The offense is not supposed to be doing this. They're supposed to be better than this. Of course, the offense as originally constructed is better than this. I'm not sure that the lineup that they're currently fielding
right.
due to injuries is better than what they've been showing.
Yeah, no, that's right. And let's talk about the injuries, because I think they are really starting to take their toll. Scott Kingery is on the injured list, has a mild hamstring strain. MRI revealed it was a mild hamstring strain. So he could be out a couple of weeks, however, which is a real shame because he was just starting to figure things out. He was hitting a team.
Yes.
It's really a shame, Liz. He was hitting a team high 406 with a 457 on base percentage and a 719 slugging percentage, 2 homers, 4 doubles, and 32 at-bats. So that was a killer losing him, because he was finally looking like the guy that we thought we were going to see when he first made the team last year, when he got that major league deal at the start of 2018. That's the Scott Kingery that we saw here at the start of the season. It's just a real blow, and you hope that when he gets back off the injured list, he doesn't lose it.
Yeah, I think his absence over the last, even just the last couple of games has been really painful, because he was sort of like he had been thrust into this position. No one had like terribly high expectations of him. So he was just now like effortlessly performing to the level that other people around him needed him to be at. It was really great to watch. It's like what we wanted to see from him all last season, but like just this year, the timing is all right and the chemistry is right. But now he's not there. And it would have been, having him in the lineup today, yesterday, would have been really great. It would have been, I think, a huge difference in what ended up happening.
No, and Justin, Scott Kingery is a guy that he everybody had lost faith in. Most Phillies fans had lost faith in. But it's important to remember, here's a top 30 prospect in all of baseball. You know, I mean, at one point, he was in some prospect lists top 30. He was Buster Olney quoted, and we've mentioned it a couple of times in the past, quoted a scout or some baseball executive who said he was Dustin Pedroia with more talent. I mean, we all rolled our eyes. Even at the height of the Scott Kingery craze, we rolled our eyes at that. But he really looked good the last couple of weeks and was one of the most impactful players in the Phillies lineup. And it's just, what's your confidence level he's going to come back and hit the way he did before he hit the IL?
You know, I don't think the team's going to be changing too much culturally or lineup wise. You know, injuries are going to happen and they're going to be, you know, guys shifting in and out of the lineup all season long. But my point is that you sign guys like Bryce Harper, you slot Rhys Hoskins in there, trade for JT Realmuto. I mean, one of the things we've been talking about is how much of an impact having other guys like that in the lineup has had on somebody like Michael Franco. There's no reason to think that having the pressure off of you and on somebody else and just letting someone else be considered like the face or the beating heart of the lineup while you just play a different role, that's going to lead to good things for more than one guy on the team. And I think Kingery is one of those guys. We didn't see too much of him initially. It wasn't until we were a couple games into the season that we started seeing him get his chance with Cesar Hernandez struggling. But I think he's somebody that benefits from that. I think he's somebody with a year under his belt, which he got to, if he's somebody like me who learns by doing, he got to learn what 1 year in the big leagues felt like and was really like, and got to come back with a whole revamped lineup, a clubhouse that Gabe Kapler was making adjustments in culture-wise, and now he gets to benefit from that. He gets to benefit from his experience. And yeah, you know, you seeing a guy on a hot streak come to a screeching halt because of his hamstring, there's obviously the chance he comes back and he's got to readjust to swing the bat again, but he doesn't have to readjust to being a Major League Baseball player. I don't think anybody should be particularly discouraged in the long term for Scott Kingery. I think his success has still been really exciting and really important to this team's overall success. Liz, you were just talking about guys who are supposed to be good, and we have plenty of guys who are supposed to be good. Scott Kingery wasn't necessarily supposed to be good. So with him producing at the level he was producing, that was an excellent sign for this team, because those are the guys you need to see execute and come through for you when you need, like, when you're trying to win a division. You need ancillary characters to take a step forward. And just him being as young as he is and as versatile as he is. I mean, that play he made at shortstop the other day, where he went to his right, made a diving stop, and managed to throw while falling down to Michael Franco to get the out at third base. I mean, that's the kind of play you could not rely on him to make last year. So it has been really exciting to see him develop and play such a big role and come through so many times. I don't think we need to worry too much that he's going to forget how to hit a fastball just because he's going to miss potentially a couple of weeks. He might come back a little cold, but I think we can still think positively about this. As more names go on the injured list, it is easy to get discouraged, but I never would have dreamed that we'd be more disappointed to see Scott Kingery on the 10-day DL. IL. Damn it. I was just talking about how good we were.
I know.
I know.
I was going to do it too.
Oh, the Phillies depth chart still says DL at the bottom. But I never would have thought we'd be more disappointed to see Scott Kingery on the 10-day IL than Odubel Herrera, Victor Arano, David Robertson, and Gene Segura. Like, honestly.
Or maybe Cesar Hernandez, who we could just put into a trebuchet and fire him in somewhere into the Delaware Valley, because I am disappointed that we now have to see more of him rather than Scott Kingery, because I'm done with Cesar.
Well, it also begs the question, how long until the Phillies? I don't think the Phillies are going to be done with Cesar Hernandez, but I mean, John, we were just talking about how Nick Pivetta, what happened to him and how they optioned him to AAA after four not great starts. It kind of was an indication of how this team was going to treat guys who weren't performing. You know, it wasn't like he was being cast out of the cold or kicked off the back of the bus while they were on the highway, but it was like, all right, well, this isn't working. We need it to at least kind of work part of the time. And a guy like Cesar, who's been struggling for most of the season, you know, you got to wonder, right now he's being forced into action because it's him and Phil Gosselin. Oh man, that middle infield, that's shoestring thin right now. But
come back soon, everyone.
When the Phillies have a little more leeway in their middle infield, you got to wonder how many more chances is he going to get, because this is a team that wants to be good fast.
Yeah, now we said they are not fooling around anymore, and the Phillies are not fooling around. The problem with Cesar Hernandez is you can't send him down to AAA because he's out of options. So if you decide, okay, Cesar Hernandez isn't our guy anymore, then he rides your bench, which is something that I think we would all be fine with, and Scott Kingery becomes your everyday second baseman. But obviously, until Gene Segura comes back, and I think the idea is when he's eligible to come off the IL at the end of this week, he will be back. There had been some discussion, if Kingery had still been healthy, that they would have brought Segura back to start on Sunday, but he was basically they wanted to make sure he was fully healthy with Kingery out so that they didn't lose Segura for 2 months, because they weren't sure how long Kingery was going to be out. And Phil Gosselin had a very nice game in the win on Saturday, where he hit the big three-run double, the bases loaded double. That was a big moment for him. And he's a local kid, makes good. You know, he had said, I've had lots of at-bats with the Phillies with the bases loaded. They've just all been in my imagination. You know, it was really cool to see him do that, and hopefully he'll prove to be an effective stopgap middle infielder here as the team waits for their two shortstops ahead of him on the depth chart get back from the IL. Looks like Kingery's going to be out a little bit longer than Segura, but they're also missing Segura at the top of that lineup. He was so much. He was tops on the team among qualified hitters with a .328 batting average, had a .384 on base, .478 slugging. And you mentioned Justin Odubel Herrera is on the IL with a hamstring strain, and Roman Quinn was called up. Quinn has not looked great since he got called up, but again, it's just a few games here and there. I think they have missed Odubel. So, I mean, I guess, which injury do you think hurt the Phillies the most this weekend out of all these guys? Was it Kingery, Segura, Odubel, or was it one of the bullpen guys, Robertson or Arano? I mean, I'm thinking it would have been nice to have Robertson closing out a game in the 12th inning, but he may not have been the arm in the 12th inning that was closing out the game. So it's tough to say. But which of these injuries do you think, I'll start with you, Liz, which of these injuries do you think hurt the team the most this weekend?
I think it's Kingery. I said that a little earlier. I think it's Kingery that, you know, his emergence was, you know, both important to the team and an incredibly compelling storyline, you know, just as a, you know, from a fan perspective. I think that hurt the team a lot because now it's a little bleak. It's a little bleak on the roster right now.
I gotta go with Gene Segura. I looked at the numbers before we started, honestly, and it's almost undeniable. I want to lean towards, based on some of the losses the Phillies have had this season, I want to lean towards one of these bullpen guys, but there's just been so much sporadic effectiveness out of the bullpen, and I think Robertson was kind of on a similar track as Kingery, and that he started showing something right before he got hurt. And it was obviously disappointing because this bullpen's been hard to rely on. Same with Victor Arano. I mean, I wish we could know these guys were injured before they come out, completely cause a disaster in a game, and then it comes out, oh, you know what? Actually, he had a compound fracture on his elbow, and we just didn't talk about it. Sorry about that.
By the way, Victor Arano hurt his elbow from a massage that he received in Miami. What? How the hell do you get an elbow injury from a massage?
Somebody needs
a bad massage. If you ever had a bad massage?
I've only had one massage in my life. I had a massage on my honeymoon, and that's it.
A bad massage is nothing to sneeze at, because if someone who is not trained well is not doing it right, then they could cause a lot of injury. Now, I think the question is, where did he get this massage? Because if it's from a clubby or something, then
that person shouldn't be touching the players anymore. Like, if you're lying down on your face and like in your peripheral, your masseuse is like, all right, everybody, you can just relax. And then in your peripheral, you just see him about to wail on your elbow with a hammer. And you're like, I have some questions and concerns about this. And I think you know what they're about.
It's like that Friends episode where Ross pretends that he's a masseuse for Phoebe and he's using wooden spoons to massage the old guy's back. That's kind of what I was thinking about.
Or, of course, he could have gotten a massage somewhere else, which begs, you know, the question, why?
We need more details on this, and I don't think we're going to get them.
But... we absolutely won't. You say massage like that, everybody's mind went one place, and they're like, we're not going to be talking about this at all moving forward.
I did say it a certain way. A massage. I did. I held on to the second syllable a little bit
but
there.
I do.
And that's...
yeah, and I just talked about it in a completely non-sexual way, choosing not to go down the Robert Kraft road.
Robert, unfortunately, it's been put into our brains, so it's, yeah. Yeah, thanks
Bob.
A lot,
Bob.
Thanks, Robert Kraft.
Appreciate that.
Everything.
Anyway, I do want to say Gene Segura is my answer, by the way. 328 hitter in the number two spot in the lineup. He coming through so many extra base hits. Just somebody who was, like you said, John, somebody who was potentially going to go as one of the more unrecognized parts of the offense, but one of its engines, absolutely. And having him at the top of the lineup with Andrew McCutchen was a real asset for the Phillies. Losing him not only loses you that offensive contributor, but also deeply weakens that middle infield we've been talking about that is so paper thin right now. So I think unquestionably it's got to be Gene Segura.
I would agree. I think it's Gene Segura too, just because Segura would be getting the starts and Kingery would still be bouncing around a little bit if Segura wasn't
right
in there.
Like a Gene Segura Cesar Hernandez up the middle is one thing. Phil Gosselin Cesar Hernandez sounds so much worse.
and Phil Gosselin had an okay series here, but just when we came into the 2019 season, in no way did we think here at the end of April we'd be seeing a Phil Gosselin written into the lineup as a shortstop as a starter for any length of time, and yet here we are, and this is kind of the lack of infield depth the team came into the season with. Phil Gosselin had a very good spring for the Phillies and was doing a decent job down in AAA, but hopefully this is just for a week or so until Gene Segura is ready to come back again. The Phillies think that he'll probably be ready by the end of the week, and they want it to be fully healed so that there's no recurrence, so that he has to miss 2 months because of a more serious hamstring strain. But I will say this, that the Phillies had a chance to win this game on Sunday had Cesar Hernandez not had that killer base running mistake in the fourth inning. And for anyone who didn't see it, they were down 1-0 when he tried to break up a double play ball sliding into second. And in an attempt, he said, to protect his face from the ball coming, he thought that the throw from the shortstop was going to hit him in the face. He put his head down and didn't realize that the second baseman had dropped the ball. And so he just popped up off the bag and started to jog away, assuming he was out. Only he wasn't, and was quickly tagged out between second and third in a rundown. It cost the Phillies at least one run, possibly two runs, and really could have changed the complete complexion of the baseball game. And you don't want to pin a loss onto one base running play. And the Phillies' base running has actually been really good this year. The addition of McCutchen and Realmuto and Harper in this lineup, three guys who know how to run the bases. This team's gone first to third more this season than I think they have the last two or three seasons combined. I don't mean that literally, but it seems that way, because it just seems that the guys they have right now are getting such good reads on the ball when they're in the air. They just know when to take that extra base. But Cesar Hernandez used to do this kind of thing all the time. It hasn't happened as much lately, but here you have another brain fart. And he admitted after the game, I need to make sure whether the umpire has called me out or safe. He said, somebody mentioned that it didn't help that Joe West just simply extended his arms to make a safe call instead of actually saying anything out of his porky mouth. But
he's
just a terrible umpire.
He finds a way every time.
That.
Like, I didn't
he
know
finds
about
a
that
way.
Angle. That's yep. That makes sense. Like, obviously, Cesar carries the blame on that.
And he admitted that. Hernandez admitted that. Yep.
Joe West is always involved in some kind of dumbass thing. When I saw he was he was umping the first game of this series, I was like, oh my God, we got Joe West for four games. Like, it's such a low point every time.
No one likes him. No one likes Joe West.
If he looks good at his job, I mean, we don't have to have our semi-annual Joe West blat. But like, if he was good at his job, at least you'd have something to talk about. But there's just nothing there. There's just nothing.
No, he is going for the all-time record in games umpired. He is I think around 100, he's over 162 games away, I think. And so he will be with us for the rest of this season and the next. He wants it and he's going to get it unless he drops it on the field, which look at him. It's a possibility.
It's not out of the realm. No.
Eat a salad, like, Joe.
Like so many things, it's just beyond parody at this point.
Like he's going to get it and it's going to be a whole big thing. Sorry. It's going to be a whole big thing and everyone's going to have to kiss the ring of the all-time greatest umpire, blah-de-blah. And it's going to be insufferable. It's going to be a season long of everyone wanting to have their last game umpired by Joe West. And
I don't think people are. I don't think people are going to celebrate it.
I don't think.
I don't think it's going to be a celebration.
Really? I think the best thing you get is like a Nelson Cruz at the All-Star game, like photo op, or Jimmy Rollins like joking around with him at third base. I think that's as close as you get. I really don't think there's going to be, because some of the players, like ex players, they'll blast umpires on Twitter, or current players just be like, these guys, like, it depends what day of the week or like how they get out of bed that morning. Like there's no accountability and there's no sometimes even reasons offered as to why certain rulings are made. And again, we're talking about a situation in which he just didn't do part of his job. Like he was just lazy part of his job. But that's one of the things that everyone, like when he gets like the hero treatment in a Sports Illustrated feature or something, it's always that he's like, oh, this tough old school guy who is like, you know, part of the game as much as the balls and bats are. But like he's out there doing the umpire equivalent of jogging a first base, and like, why are we honoring this person?
No, I agree 100%. And we can touch on Joe West again as the summer goes along, because I'm sure he'll make sure that we mention his name once or twice more here during the course of the season. We're going to take a quick break. Up next, we're going to talk about some encouraging performances from the staff ace and a guy we haven't really seen pitch regularly in a couple of years. We'll do that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's get into the Aaron Nola start on Saturday night, guys, because while the Phillies lost 3 out of 4 against the Rockies, maybe the biggest takeaway and maybe the best thing to happen out of this series in Colorado, and maybe the thing to make the series loss worth it, is how Aaron Nola finished up his performance. I don't want to make too much out of his last few innings, because he wasn't good in the first 3 innings of his start on Saturday. But in the last 3 innings, in the 4th, 5th, and 6th innings, the old Aaron Nola was back. He was hitting his spots. He wasn't missing all of his pitches by a mile. He was on the corners. All of a sudden, hitters started taking really ugly-looking swings against him. A lot of check swings, a lot of called third strikes on fastballs on the inside part of the plate, 94, 95 miles an hour. He started painting again, and his curveball, suddenly it seemed like he was able to kind of put his curveball on a string. His changeup was dancing down and away from left-handers. His overall line isn't great. He gave up 9 hits in 5 2/3 innings, and Gabe Kapler didn't let him finish the 6th. He didn't want him facing Charlie Blackmon for a 4th time after Blackmon had gone 3 for 3 against him in a 1-run game. He gave up 3 earned runs, but he struck out 9 guys and walked just 1 in 5 2/3 innings, and I believe 8 of those strikeouts came in the final 3 innings. I really feel like Aaron Nola took a step towards getting back on track, and I think we all thought that he would, but it had started to grow a little bit worrisome how hard guys were hitting balls off of him, all the home runs he had been giving up. It seemed to me that injuries weren't an issue. He kept saying over and over again that injuries weren't an issue. He was still throwing hard, but he lost his command and it seemed mechanical. Justin, it appears as though, hopefully, maybe Aaron Nola is getting back on track. This seemed like a nice bounce back start to him and a springboard for future starts. I left that start very much encouraged. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's an okay way to feel about it. He honestly, coming into that start, every time he's made an appearance, it's been like, okay, is this going to be the time we see Aaron Nola turn it around? It's not only been painful to not have him stabilizing the top of the rotation, but at the same time, it's just been inevitable that he's going to figure it out. And like, yeah, he didn't have a 1-2-3 inning, I think, all night.
He did not.
And yeah, and I think he definitely, like you said, I think he started slow. His curveball started ineffective and then got better as the night went on. We knew this was coming. It's just, I think this is something that is going to be a foundation for a turnaround moving forward. I think one of the biggest and best takeaways of this was not that like he was able to get everybody out. What do you like 10 base runners in less than six innings? Like that's obviously not the Aaron Nola you want to see. But at the same time, he was able to get big outs. And like, I don't want to break things down to completely intangible stuff, but at the same time, like that's what you saw. There were moments there where the Rockies could have battered him, where the game could have been broken open, and he actually made his pitches. And for somebody who's been struggling with his command, that was really encouraging. So yeah, always having runners on base was definitely just like a more stressful situation, and he managed to come through. And you know, at this point, we'll take it. You know, like we will certainly take it.
Yeah.
So I think this is definitely, and like we said, pitching in Coors Field, you wouldn't expect a pitcher to start looking better in a park that's such an offensive asset. But at the same time, yeah, this was encouraging, and I think we're going to see hopefully some steps forward. And boy, what a time this would be to see the improvement rotation that we need to see. If they used this time with the offense thinner than it's been all season to take a few steps forward, pitch deeper into games and carry, make fewer runs stand up than they have all season, that'd be really something. But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves, because the whole point of this is that, okay, he broke it down to one pitch at a time. He was able to make his biggest pitches in the biggest moments of the game. Let's just start with that. So yes, it's encouraging. Let's see more of it.
Liz, what did you make of Nola's start on Saturday? I mean, it was a good thing to see. I know that, and we're going to get into this in just a second. He's one of just a number of ace starting pitchers this year who have struggled, but to see him kind of get back on track was encouraging.
I mean, that's the Aaron Nola we know. We've seen him do this type of thing a lot, have a rough start and then, you know, make adjustments and cruise for another five innings. You know, it wasn't exactly like that, but like that's why I like watching him start. His starts are never boring. You know, like you don't want him to give up runs, but it's entertaining, you know, to see him struggle and then do it better next time. You know, that's why he's one of my favorite pitchers to watch, because it's such a different sort of intellectual game when he sort of rights the ship.
No doubt about it. And that was the thing I think that Justin mentioned that was really key, was that we've seen him. One of the things that Gabe Kapler has always marveled about him is to stay cool under pressure when he's dealing with runners on base, when he's in the stretch, unlike Nick Pivetta, who when he gets into trouble seems to implode and can't make the pitches that he needs to. Aaron Nola figures it out, and that's what he did on Saturday. So a very encouraging performance from Nola on Saturday. And Liz, just kind of looking at ace starting pitchers overall, what's going on with ace starters this year? I mean, we have Nola, even after that performance on Saturday, still has a 6.84 ERA, which is fourth highest among qualified starters in baseball. Chris Sale has an 8.50 ERA. He doesn't have enough innings to qualify among league leaders because he hasn't been able to stay in games long enough, but he's made five starts. Zach Wheeler for the Mets has a 6.35 ERA. Corey Kluber has a 5.88 ERA. Noah Syndergaard's at 5.63. Steven Strasburg had a 5.56 ERA coming into Sunday, but he had a really good game against the Marlins, so that ERA number came down a little bit, but he had been struggling. Garrett Cole, a 5.22 ERA. Zach Greinke had also had a decent game on Sunday, but he had been struggling, has a 4.60 ERA. Max Scherzer has a 4.45 ERA. These are great pitchers, all of whom have struggled here early in the year. I really don't find this to be a coincidence. There has to be some kind of thread connecting all these different guys. What do you think?
Well, my thought is, you know, you look at increased offense and home run rates right now, and there's something happening with the ball again. You can go to Baseball Prospectus and read what Rob Arthur has written about it recently, that there is decreased drag on the ball yet again, and that is affecting how the ball is sailing through the air, and how pitchers, you know, and how it's coming right off the bat. Like, I think some of this is out of the control of pitchers. They're doing what they can. Joel Sherman of the Post, New York Post, I think, like made an idle suggestion that it's a manufacturing issue, which is interesting since Major League Baseball owns Rawlings now. They bought it last year.
Oh, I can see Joel Sherman's MLB source just texting him in the middle of the night that just says manufacturing issue. And then just like, that's what he goes with the next day.
Like, and that, like, it could be, but if that's true, then, you know, Major League Baseball said at the time, we wanted more control over production of the baseball. That is what they said.
Yeah, that's not for no reason, you know?
Yeah, that's not for no reason. They wanted it because despite the fact that their own commission found that there's nothing wrong with the ball and whatever, you know, they decided that's what they wanted anyway. And now the ball, this is happening to the ball. So either it's negligence on their part or it's intentional. Those are the only two choices.
And I wonder also, I mean, if the ball is different, whether or not the ball feels different for pitchers, whether it's hurting their command. I mean, not, even as much as the ball flying through the air with less wind resistance, because maybe the lace, I heard a lot of people, I think even the Phillies broadcast was talking about the laces looked like they were lower, closer to the ball, so that it would be harder for pitchers to grip it as well. And certainly for a pitcher like Aaron Nola, who relies on touch and feel to command his curveball and his changeup and even his fastball, given how much his fastball moves, you would think that any change in the ball like that to make it slicker or to make it so that a pitcher has more difficulty gripping it would be a pretty big deal. So, Justin, what do you think is the connecting thread here? Do you believe this, that the ball's different here? I mean, the numbers certainly bear it out.
I'm not as intelligent as Liz or even aware enough as Liz, but I'll certainly agree with the notion that, and it's perfectly believable, that baseball is doing something to its baseballs to give them a little extra boost. It just makes too much sense. And baseball's not good enough at covering its tracks. I mean, if their goal was to like do something to the baseballs to make it easier to hit home runs, you're not going to be able to hide that if you do it successfully. Like, suddenly there's going to be more home runs like we're seeing in Major League Baseball, like we're seeing in AAA baseball.
It happened 2 years
ago. Yeah, exactly. And look, turns out there was a problem at the factory. And now we're doing this. Now we're doing this again. Like, come on, baseball. Let's try a different narrative. Like, let's at least be a little creative. Like, now what? There's just going to be a cover up saying like, oh, well, we're not doing anything. And then in a year, like, oh, whoops. Turns out that the balls were hollow and we just didn't know, like a bunch of them got replaced with tennis balls and we didn't have the quality control to cover that. Like, you know, it's just, they're gonna get away with it. I just think it's, I'm always just amused at this, that like, are we upset that they're doing this? I mean, it's hurting pitchers, obviously. And that's actually something that, when I wrote that story earlier in the season about the Atlantic League and how the rule experimentation going on there was unfair to pitchers, and all these pitchers were frustrated that some of the adjustments being made were clearly to make baseball more exciting. They were focusing on how offense is exciting, and that hurts pitchers. And that's something that's obviously true at the major league level as well. So I don't know. I'd be curious to hear pitchers' thoughts on this, because it is something that baseball wants to focus on, make its sport more dynamic, make it more highlights, more shareable videos, and home runs are the thing that people share in baseball. That's like baseball's slam dunk. That's what people want to see, and that's not good for pitchers. So yeah, I'm sure they've done something. I'm not smart enough to figure out what it is, but I'm aware enough to know that yeah, they're doing something and they're gonna get away with it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Jared Eichhoff start on Sunday. Obviously, taking Nick Pivetta's place in the rotation, this was his first start as a member of the 2019 rotation. And
yay.
He went yay. I mean, you're right, Liz. This is a great story after a guy had a version of carpal tunnel for the last 2 years, and it wasn't sure. Nobody was sure if he was ever going to come back. He pitched 6 innings, gave up 7 hits, 8 strikeouts in 6 innings. He did have 4 walks, but got 7 strikeouts on the curveball in his game on Sunday. He doesn't throw hard, Liz. He's not a guy who's going to blow anybody away, but that curveball, even in Coors Field with the high altitude and the fact that high altitude, low oxygen atmosphere and environment tends to sap the effectiveness and the bite that curveballs and other breaking pitches have, was still very effective. You know, it was an encouraging first start for Jared Eichhoff as well. He did a decent job trying to hold the Rockies at bay. He ended up giving up 4 runs in his 6 innings of work, but 3 of those runs came in his final inning of work in the 6th inning, which is not surprising that in his 6th inning of work he would kind of run into a wall, having not really pitched regularly yet this season. So, generally speaking, what do you think about Eichhoff's first performance? Certainly enough to earn him a second.
Absolutely. It was so great to see him back. It's such a vote of confidence, you know, for the Phillies to say, well, you know, you're the guy. You're coming back. It's been a rough couple of years. I've always been a fan of his. I like him more than I like Eflin and Pivetta. And I haven't been able to talk about that for the last few years because he's not been around for me to say, let's stop talking about them and talk about Jared Eichhoff instead. He looked really good. I was really encouraged, and I think, you know, for a 5th starter, what he did today is perfectly fine.
Yeah, Justin, I mean, I guess, yeah, he's replacing the number 2 starter, but he's obviously the number 5 starter on the depth chart right now, and given how Vince Velasquez has pitched extremely well this season, Velasquez has looked very good, Zach Eflin has looked very good for most of his starts this season, Eichhoff as the number 5 would be a tremendous boost, if anything, just to give the team consistency. With Pivetta, there's a lot of times you'd get that great performance from him, very much like Velasquez, and then you'd get those performances where he implodes. One of the things you could always count on for Jared Eichhoff, it's why I called him the human metronome. Remember that? Yeah, because he'd give you 6 innings, 2 or 3 runs allowed virtually every single time out.
You sound like a man who's trying to manufacture a t-shirt, John. Frankly.
You know,
all this human metronome repetition.
I'm just out here saying words and stuff, man.
If people think it's cool enough to wear it on their bodies, then hey, just pay me $25 and you can do so. No, I would go so far as to say Jared Eichhoff pitching well was an even more encouraging and exciting notion than Aaron Nola pitching well, just because, like,
wow.
I said, Aaron Nola is pitching well again is an inevitability. That was not the case with Jared Eichhoff. Like Liz said, I mean, this was a guy that maybe hadn't been written off, but he'd certainly been forgotten about in sort of a good way. And that seeing him again was like, oh yeah. And there's also Eichhoff. Definitely a guy struggling with lingering issues is not somebody you want to pin your hopes to. But that's why it was so exciting to see him pitch as well as he did in these games. You know, he's not a guy with a heart stopping fastball. I think he tops out in like the barely low 90s. And like you said, obviously he's known for his curveball, but he was pushing a slider in there. But 9 first pitch sliders out of 15 batters he faced in one of his appearances, and he barely used his fastball. And he managed to be impactful. I mean, you know, 4 walks, fine. I can forgive that. Seeing a Jared Eichhoff who looks like he can pitch in the major leagues again, that would be huge. I mean, like I said earlier, if this rotation uses this opportunity with a weakened lineup to take a few steps forward, like that would be, boy, that would be so comforting. And Jared Eichhoff could now be a part of that. And that is really exciting. And it's great that they had the depth to make this move when Pivetta was struggling to swap him out with Eichhoff after seeing what he could do. Yeah, that's great. And you know what? This story tells us also that the book's not done on Nick Pivetta either. So
very true.
You know, you can see him succeed at AAA and maybe come back. And, you know, his idol is Roy Halladay. He went through the same thing, having to go down to the minors to learn how to pitch again, basically, and come back up and be an impactful pitcher. So, that the Phillies were able to make this move was great. That Jared Eichhoff was able to come through and step up and look as good as he did was awesome. So, yeah, I'm deeply encouraged more so by Eichhoff than Nola.
It's interesting. We'll see how he does moving forward. It's one start, but if it's anything, he was just such a surprise return from the Cole Hamels trade. That was not a name that anybody was really focused on when that trade happened, and he probably will end up being the most impactful player for this Phillies team long term when all is said and done out of any of the players to come. I mean, you still got Nick Williams on this team, but Jorge Alfaro was traded away for JT Realmuto. I guess in that way, or Alfaro could be the most impactful, but that he brought back such a good player in part, brought back such a good player in Realmuto. But Jared Eichhoff has a chance to stick in this rotation, and if Pivetta comes back and he pitches well at AAA, maybe they use him in the back of the bullpen, which would strengthen the back of the bullpen. So there's a lot of different ways this this could go. Obviously, we need to see some more starts from Jared Eichhoff before we know for sure. But performing that well against a good hitting team in a hitter's ballpark, a good start for Jared Eichhoff here in 2019. And one last thing before we take our quick break. The less we see of Charlie Blackmon going forward, the better. He came into this series, guys, hitting 219 with a 567 OPS. He ended it hitting 286 on the season with an 802 OPS. He went 10 for 18 with two doubles, two triples, and I think he had two home runs in the series. He now has a career 348 batting average with 10 home runs and 23 RBIs against the Phillies. And this is a team he only plays twice a year. So thank goodness Charlie Blackmon signed an extension with the Rockies. We only have to see him twice a year because I am done with this dude. He's a phenomenal player. I'm just glad we're not going to have to see him until he comes back to Philadelphia. He also, however, owns Citizens Bank Park. So
yeah, that's less than a month away, by the way.
Well, just prepare yourselves, kids. Batten down the hatches. Up next, we're going to preview the series against the Mets coming up this week and talk about a team in the Mets who is also having an issue with their ace starter. We'll deal with that up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so we'll spend our last segment here of the podcast previewing the upcoming series against the New York Mets. It'll be Jake Arrieta on Monday taking on Steven Matz, who, of course, we all remember from last week when the Phillies blitzed him for 8 runs in the first inning without allowing Matz to record a single out in the game. Matz will give it another go here on Monday and actually try to retire a Philadelphia Philly. Watch, he's going to throw a 3-hit shutout. You just know it, right? So you got Zach Eflin versus Zach Wheeler on Tuesday, and then Vinny Velasquez versus Jason Vargas on Wednesday. The Phillies will miss Jacob deGrom in this series, Justin, who's undergoing tests on his elbow. We found out on Friday that his elbow was quote-unquote barking at him as he was playing catch. He was scratched. He would have been scratched from his start on Sunday anyway, so the Phillies would have missed him even if he had made his start on Sunday. They said he was dealing with a stomach illness or some kind of flu and hadn't been able to maintain his normal in-between start regimen. So he was going to miss his start on Sunday anyway, and the Phillies were going to miss him no matter what. But this latest situation where he has a barking elbow and they decided to have him undergo an MRI just as a precaution. Justin, they're playing this off like it's no big deal, but if DeGrom does miss time for the Mets, if this becomes a major thing, which would be a bigger loss for their team? Would it be the Mets losing DeGrom or Aaron Nola missing the same amount of time for the Phillies?
Come on, man. Don't make me. That's rough.
This is a Saw question. Okay, I'm Jigsaw right now. You gotta pick.
The Mets' biggest asset is that they have the best starting pitching in the NL East. If we're talking about the 4-team scrum that we consider the NL East, obviously, I think we've come to an agreement that it's not going to be a 4-team scrum all season long. And if the Mets are one of the teams that's still hanging on late in the year, it'll be largely in part that the fact that they've been able to rely on elite level starting pitching, whereas the other teams have been like, well, we're making do with what we got. Or in the Phillies case, you know, we're trying to work around the struggles of pitchers we know are good. In the Mets case, we're talking about Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard alone being two of the best pitchers in baseball, and the Phillies have to face them multiple times a year. Taking them out of the equation hurts the Mets in a deeply serious way. I feel like I've been saying the word deeply all night. I do apologize for that.
Do you deeply apologize?
I'm deeply apologetic about that. Yeah.
There you go.
I unquestionably think the loss of Jacob DeGrom hurts the Mets in a way that losing Aaron Nola, I mean, you know, it's similar in that they're losing their best. Both teams would be losing their best pitchers, but DeGrom is exactly the kind of stopper ace that the Phillies don't have this season yet since Aaron Nola has been having his struggles. On top of that, what's with the Mets MRI machine? Like, wasn't it last year Noah Syndergaard was like, they were like, you need to get an MRI. And he was like, I know my body.
Oh, he's like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. And like this year, they're like,
yeah, they're not screwing around this year.
DeGrom's like, oh,
get in there.
Yeah, get in that MRI. And he's like, well, first we're going to like do some soft tossing and we're going to figure out if something's wrong with it. And they're like, get in. I feel like it's just like this old, like first original model MRI machine with like a bunch of slamming doors and like teeth, and
it's got a hand crank, Justin. They have a couple
like
of
a
guys,
garbage disposal in there, and they're just like, I'm not getting in that thing. Absolutely not. That just why is that a recurring thing with the Mets? And the answer is because we're talking about the Mets, and everything in there was bought from like a Costco that was going out of business.
Justin, I mean, Liz, I'll ask you the same question. Which pitcher would be a bigger loss for their team, DeGrom for the Mets or Nola for the Phillies?
It's DeGrom. Like, I love Aaron Nola, but, like, the Mets are essentially Jacob DeGrom and also Noah Syndergaard. But without both of them, like, the Mets didn't add any other pitchers.
Yeah.
The Mets didn't really do that at all. And who they have is who they have. They don't have a lot of depth. And losing him is a big deal, especially like Zach Wheeler's also not doing well right now. Steven Matz got shelled by the Phillies recently. So, you know, they're already not doing great without him. So if they're, you know, if he's going to be out for any length of time, that changes the Mets a little bit.
I stand by that DeGrom is the bigger loss, but like take a second and just chew on the idea of Aaron Nola hitting that's, like the 60-day injured list.
Well,
right,
that's
now.
That's where I'm going.
What are you doing?
That's where I'm going.
Shut up,
because
both of you.
I disagree. I think losing Aaron Nola would be a bigger blow for the Phillies than DeGrom for the Mets, because having seen the Mets come into town, I think the Mets offense is really good. That's a team that they don't have a Bryce Harper in their lineup, but they have guys up and down that lineup that can hit and can score. So I think the Mets are going to score some runs this year. And I think the Mets have more big time arms in that rotation to kind of fill the void if DeGrom were to go down.
No, they have a Syndergaard.
Syndergaard can be your staff ace. I don't think the Phillies have an ace that can step in for Aaron Nola if Aaron Nola were to go down. And I think Zach Wheeler is better than his ERA indicates right now. Steven Matz is a decent left-handed starter. I mean, he's not the guy that couldn't retire a single batter. I mean, Jason.
But even he's better. Like, yeah, even he's better than the numbers would indicate. And like, DeGrom goes down. Well, at least we have Syndergaard. Nola goes down. We're sitting here talking about how encouraging it was to see Jared Eichhoff walk four people. Like, there's not a whole lot behind him.
Jake Arrieta has pitched really well this year, and I'm excited and intrigued by how he's looked so far this season. But Aaron Nola is this team's only ace. So I think the Phillies would lose.
I can't entertain this. It's painful.
Not that it's going to happen.
Don't make me.
The fact that we're openly talking about it means it's not going to happen. That's how jinxes work, Liz. That's how it goes, right? Isn't that written down someplace?
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right, too.
The Phillies are facing Jacob Vargas in this series. I think we're able to be at least a little positive.
Jason Vargas stinks, and the Mets have been talking about. They've been linked to guys like Keuchel. Are they going to talk to Keuchel? The Mets are not going to sign Dallas Keuchel. The Mets don't sign people. That's just not what they do. I know they had a busy offseason, but they don't go out and sign free agents.
The Mets, you know, kidnap drifters to feed the terrible hunger of their ancient MRI machine that has become sentient. They don't sign baseball players they're going to use.
Exactly.
I'm trying to figure out the mythical link between this MRI machine and Mr. Met. Is that what created Mr. Met?
Could be some kind of gross mutation. I think that's
he was a star prospect for them until the MRI machine chopped his head off, and now they replaced it with a giant baseball, and now he lives on as their mascot for all eternity.
There's just some Mets fan fiction that needs to happen. There's Justin, I challenge you to create this.
Does this really sound like it's going to be a challenge?
No, this is the new baseball sports themed Goosebumps series.
There you go.
This is the first.
And then you guys could review it for a Patreon Hitting Season episode, so that it all comes full circle. All right, as we wrap up episode 279, any final thoughts, Justin? Let me start with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm before the series with the Mets starts, I'm not excited. I'm curious to see Pete Alonso in action again. Once the series actually is being played, I will absolutely despise seeing Pete Alonso playing for the Mets again. As I've said, I picked him to be my NL Rookie of the Year this year, and you know, he's cooled off a bit since his extremely hot start, but this is still a guy who in his last 15 games was hitting .291 as a rookie. So, I mean, you know, he's not somebody you want to face. And like you said, John, this is a lineup full of guys who can hit. They're not always hitting, but there's guys in here who can hit. The Mets have a very, and this is going to shock you to hear, annoying lineup. This is a very, very annoying. Mm-hmm. Ahmed Rosario, Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, just annoying guys to just get you
Jeff
in the
McNeil,
side.
Yeah. Robinson, mm-hmm. Cano. I mean, just, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to it for that reason. But then again, the payoff of beating them is so gratifying that you do kind of look forward to it. So hopefully the Phillies come through with a different team that lost 3 out of 4 in Denver.
Yeah, and if you're gonna lose a series, you'd rather lose it to the Rockies than the Mets. So hopefully the Phillies can bounce back. Liz, any final thoughts from you as we wrap this episode up?
Not really any baseball thoughts. I just want to say we're entering beer festival season. If anybody goes to a beer festival, you drink something great, let me know on Twitter. I'd love to know what interesting beers people are drinking.
All right. So that Twitter account, again, is at Liz Rocher. And hey, you could copy Justin and I on that too, because I like beer.
We do.
I mean, yeah, beer is good. So that's at John Stolness and at Justin_Clue. And just a reminder to catch the latest episode of Continued Success that Justin and Liz did last week, taking a look back at 2009, but they're also delving into the 2019 season as well. It was an outstanding episode. And of course, if you subscribe to the Good Fight feed, you'll get Continued Success as well as The Dirty Inning and this podcast as well. And I mentioned it a second ago, check out our Hitten Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/hittenseason. When you find the Good Fight podcast feed at Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star rating and a review while you're there. Leave a Phillies comment while you're there. The best Phillies comments, you know, we'll read them on the show, and you can get your thoughts heard that way. And we'll do another mailbag coming up here in the next little while, and give out the Hitten Season voicemail again, so you can leave your thoughts and we can chat at you as we're now basically one full month into the Philly season here, guys. And overall, it's been a pretty good month so far. So we'll look to hope to keep this thing moving here as we enter the month of May in the next couple of days. Folks, that'll do it for episode number 279 of Hitten Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz, and we'll talk to you all next time right here on Hitten Season.